Divine Body, the show that is supporting your body-mind-spirit connection and supporting the fact that we are a spiritual being living in a physical experience. And today I have the pleasure and the honor to welcome Stéphane Bodian along with a great topic. He's going to share with us the spiritual awakening. His latest book, Wake Up Now, carries a very, very interesting message of wisdom about awakening. And I personally read it and found it very insightful because it includes theories as well as direct practical tools to implement this vision, and which makes it very, very interactive and personable. And so we're going to be talking about the vision that Stephen has, and as well as what's in the book and what you should go and like run to the bookshelf and get it. So Stephen, good evening. How are you doing?
Good evening. How are you, Eileen? Very nice to talk with you.
Yeah, you too. Thank you so much for taking some of the time. I know it's very precious. You're a very demanding person because of what you do and. I know that you can support so many people in so many ways because of your background that you're going to share with us in a short time. So thank you so much again for taking the time to be with us today. And so talking about you, let us know what is your background, where are you coming from, and how is this book coming out of you?
That's an interesting question. My background, in terms of my past, was that I was trained in Zen for many years. I was a Zen monk for 10 years, and I studied with some wonderful Zen masters. But after many years of intensive meditation, facing a wall for hours each day for many days on end, as Zen monks are wont to do. It got to the point where I realized that meditation somehow alone wasn't sufficient. That what I had read about in the books about Zen, the Zen masters who wake up and have these epiphanies, these profound awakening experiences, it wasn't happening to me. In fact, the more that I meditated, the more kind of dry and contracted I felt, And I don't know, I can't blame anyone. I just know that that was my experience. And at a certain point, I just recognized that I'd reached the end of the road in that particular tradition, in that particular form. So I left. I set aside my robes. It was a very difficult thing to do because I was very committed to the spiritual path that I was on, very committed to Zen practice. But I just knew that I had to do it. So it was a leap of faith and courage. And then I left the monastery and went off and started studying Western psychology because I felt that there was something that I needed to learn about the mind and about the psyche that I wasn't getting from my my time on the cushion and from my Zen teachers who were, very compassionate and very wise in their way, but there was something missing. Things, emotions were coming up, anger, sadness that I didn't know how to deal with, and again, I hadn't awakened. So I spent a number of years studying psychology. I eventually became a psychotherapist, which is my work in the world. During that time, I meditated more sporadically, just more as the spirit moved me. And then, at the invitation of a friend, I went to visit a teacher, not of Zen, but of something called Advaita Vedanta, which is from the Indian Hindu tradition. Advaita literally means non-dual. not two, non-dual Vedanta. Vedanta is the primary philosophical tradition of Hinduism. And this is sort of the non-dual strain within Vedanta. When I met this person, I was stunned. I was really shocked and amazed because I really felt that I had finally met someone who was really awake, fully awake, because there was really a sense that there was no one there in the very best sense, in the sense of no ego, no grasping, no identification, no story. He really seemed totally present, totally compassionate, and totally empty of a story, And I could sense that, very soon. It took me a few visits to see him. But I really could sense that. And so I was just completely taken. I thought, I don't care whether he practices Zen. I don't care what he calls it. I'm going to be with him, This is the person I want to study with. So I spent 10 years with this teacher. He was actually French. And you might enjoy that. And he would come over from France usually once a year for like 3 or 4 months and teach in the United States. So I spent as much time as I could with him when he would come over. His name was Jean Klein.
Okay.
And then after years of studying with him, during my first year of studying with him, I had a very powerful awakening experience because I stopped meditating and just was open, to the teachings, open to hearing what he had to say, open to the direct pointing to truth that he offered. He would say, don't meditate in the sense of making meditation a habit. He said, if you meditate, meditate because you really want to know the answer to the question, who am I? Who am I really? You see, not just something you do every day at, 9 a.m. because that's on your schedule, but because you really want to know the truth. And so I heard him, I believed him, and there was a profound awakening.
Very interesting.
Yes.
Thank you for sharing that with us.
Yes, you're welcome.
Yes, and so that's, that comes to my next question, because you just mentioned it. This who am I is really, in your book, you're really putting forth the idea that the more you are, defining yourself as a seeker, and maybe you are getting away to be really the finder. So how do you explain that?
Well, first of all, what we're looking for is not something distant from us. It's not something in the far distant future. And many spiritual paths give you the impression that if you practice meditation for so many years and chant and do your mantra and practice asanas or whatever it is, that eventually you'll achieve some special state. And that's the goal of spiritual practice. But in the tradition that I come from, Zen and Advaita, both teach this, and also Dzogchen from the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, which I also studied, that your true nature is your natural state. It's something that's already always present, beneath all the conditioning, all the thoughts. It's the radiant jewel, the radiant background of all experience. And so it merely needs to be recognized. Rather than, achieved. It's not something you achieve. It's something you recognize that's always already been there.
And you call it the birthright.
Yeah, I say it's your birthright.
Correct.
That's the words that came to me, because it is your birthright. We are born, trailing clouds of glory do we come from God who is our home. This is what Wordsworth said, William Wordsworth. We come with that radiance.
Yes.
From our divine source.
Correct.
But we lose that. We lose touch with that through our conditioning and our childhood, And it seems like it's inevitable. There are very few children who ever don't lose touch with it. But the spiritual path is about rediscovering, again, what we've always been. So that's why, I would say that it's our birthright, and that when we get into the mode of seeking, of striving towards something out there, we stray away from what's already been the case, what's always true, you know. We're looking out there, you know.
That's true. So
there's a wonderful story of Nasruddin, you know, the great Sufi sage, you know. And his students find him rummaging around on the ground under a lamp post. And they say, Nasruddin, what are you doing? He said, I'm looking for my keys. I can't find them. But they said, well, where did you lose them? He said, well, I lost them back there in the bushes. He said, why are you looking over here? He said, because there's more light over here. See? So if we keep looking in the wrong place, even though there seems to be more light there, we're not going to find them.
Yes.
Right.
Definitely. That's very good. And it's true. You know, I remember about 10 years ago, back in France, I had met, I guess the same way you met your, you know, your teacher, and I did meet mine at that time, and it was like very stunning. It was one sentence that he told me that was enough for me to just switch to that understanding that there was nowhere to go, but there was only you know, to be and really to unveil it. And it was what the Buddha says: there is no way to happiness. Happiness is the way. And when he told me that, each word was sinking slowly, like, oh, that is the truth. Like, he was totally vibrating with it.
Yeah.
And I totally understand what you said. And I think that it's very good that, you know, people like you have that, that support, like, with your book to put it out there and really make it, available for, you know, the mass, because I think that there is the message.
Yeah.
And
it's beautiful when you meet a teacher like you met, and when I met John Klein.
Yes.
Something about the power of the presence of this person stops you in your tracks, and
the
words go deeply into your being and resonate with the core of your being. So meeting a teacher like that is a very powerful and transformative experience.
Yes. And so another part in your book that I found very interesting and very, you know, so crossroads with whatever we see right now in our Western world, and where, you know, we are, it seems, it appears that our societies are really striving for effort and achievement, and you need to be that and get there and do that and be on that and be better than and the best at. And you are explaining in your book that effort and achievement actually reinforce it, can have the tendency to reinforce to be on a, in quotes, wrong path, not necessarily the path of awakening. So can you tell us a little bit more about it and help our listener to
sure
get around that?
You know, the path of effort or striving reinforces the sense of a separate self, right? The sense of a me who is controlling life, or at least, you know, has the mistaken impression that it's controlling life, but the sense of a me that, you know, seems to be controlling life, and the sense of a me that exists over time from the past to the future and needs to get something in the future in order to feel fulfilled and okay about oneself. So the whole path of effort and striving tends to reinforce that sense of the separate self. Whereas the path of awakening is very different. The path of awakening invites us to awaken out of the identity with the separate self, this me that we take ourselves to be, with this long history, this story about me and all these qualities that I have and all the failures and the successes and the heartbreaks and, you know, all this heavy weight that we carry around with us, to wake up out of that. What a relief to wake up out of the story and realize that we are consciousness itself. We are God itself. We are the divine radiance itself, spirit itself. To realize that we are that, that is what awakening is about. So even, you know, in my book, I rather controversially and with a lot of kind of mischievous delight, sort of critique the whole secret, you know.
You're right. I was going to mention it. So that's very interesting, because here is that, I would say, it touches mainstream, like it brings to a wider mainstream mass, you know, number of people who maybe had no idea whatsoever of maybe a something greater, wider, bigger, and then still it gets to them because it touches the, there he goes. It's like,
that's
well,
it.
You know, you can be greater, but if you look, if you want your big house. So it is very interesting because somewhere, there's a part of me that believe in a perfect order, universal order.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, I have that thought, I would say, that idea that it is okay because consciousness, global consciousness is waking up, and then maybe there is a need to get to that through that path. So it is a path.
Mm.
But I am like you. It's somewhere it's like that it doesn't feel all true.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
But
well, first of all, I would say that this is the perfect universal order.
Yes.
What we're living in right now.
Yes.
How could it not be? Because
exactly.
Because it's you know, the divine creation.
Correct.
The divine manifestation. If we could see that it was the perfect divine order, the perfect
mm-hmm.
order, then, of course, we'd all be happy and in harmony, and then, of course, it would be perfect. So that's the kind of the paradox, but
correct.
It is perfect just as it is.
Yes.
And the thing about the secret, and I think you're right, you know, to really put it in a larger context, it really does awaken people
mm-hmm.
To the power of the mind,
mm-hmm.
right, and the you know, the inextricable connection between consciousness and manifestation. They're
mm-hmm.
they're one. And so that makes a lot of sense. So
mm-hmm.
for many people, this is like a real awakening to that dimension of being.
Mm-hmm.
But the, as you say, the downside is that it's still within that framework
yes.
of the dream of the me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, you know, I'll use my mind and I'll use consciousness
mm-hmm.
to get that house,
yes.
you know, big house in the suburbs and a fancy car, you know.
Correct.
Trophy husband or trophy wife, you know?
Yes.
Just another technology, another kind of striving.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Yes. And but so somewhere, is it, is there a need, I mean, maybe that's what it is, there's a need for a certain consciousness today to go through experiencing the power of the mind through the physicality
mm.
and realizing that actually there's no more happiness through it, and then therefore we can use that power to really like getting into the spirituality.
Maybe that's true. That's
mm-hmm.
an interesting thought.
Mm-hmm.
That's definitely a possibility. That
okay.
in some way we need to, you know, we need to bottom out, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
We need to come to the end
yes.
of the possibilities of the material.
Correct.
Existence as a source of satisfaction. I'm not saying we
mm-hmm.
need to leave the material plane, but
yes.
to look for satisfaction outside of ourselves, eventually that wears itself out. And that's often
yes.
what motivates people, of course,
mm-hmm.
to come to a path like the path I'm describing. They've
mm-hmm.
come to realize that, you know, even the power of intention and these other kind of New Age approaches
yes.
still don't do it. There needs to be something deeper, something more.
Correct.
Yeah.
So when you're talking about that, the attachment to whatever is physical, whatever is the achievement of having things, what I feel is that, and you express it as well in the book, that you can. It is not about not feeling emotion. It is not about taking emotion totally away and living a free, an emotion-free life. But so therefore, is it to reach a life where we are detached of the emotion? It's like we can live it, but we are not attached to it in a way that we are sucking ourselves into it.
Yeah, I would say that's a good way to put it, because we're not interested. I'm not interested anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not recommending to anyone that we get rid of our feelings, our emotions. Feelings come and go,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's a very natural flow of feelings. But most negative emotions that persist are usually fueled by a story, a core belief that we have about life.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as we are identified with this core belief, this core story, then we're going to continue to suffer,
mm-hmm.
you see. And so to really look deeply at some of these core beliefs, to see them for what they are, and then to not identify with them. Again, not trying to eliminate anything,
mm-hmm.
but if we can see it as just a belief, you know. Mm-hmm. I do this all the time with people. This is some most of my work with people
mm-hmm.
In my counseling, spiritual counseling and psychotherapy, is to work with these core beliefs that
yes.
keep us, you know, and there are many of them, but they mostly take the form of, you know, there's something wrong with me,
yes.
there's something wrong with life,
mm-hmm.
I'm not safe, you know, core beliefs like that, that
mm-hmm.
people shouldn't act this way, you know, all kinds of ideas we have about life, you know.
Yes.
And that's what causes us ongoing suffering, you know.
Mm-hmm.
As far as feelings that come and go, you know, someone cuts you off in traffic, and there'll be a wave of fear and a wave of anger, and there you are, you know.
Correct.
But do you hold on to it? Do you do you then get angrier and angrier and angrier, you know? That's
mm-hmm.
the question.
Mm-hmm.
Or does it just pass?
Yes.
That's the difference. And, of course, when you don't identify as a separate self anymore, then these feelings just, they're just like, you know, just clouds that disappear
yes.
very quickly.
So, we were talking earlier about the ego, and here's the soul. And my understanding was that there is a need somewhere, like a need. Like I would say that it feels to me that as long as we have what I call an healthy ego, which allows myself to live in this physical dimension,
mm-hmm.
then I can experience my spirituality, my spiritual part, my spiritual being through it.
Mm-hmm.
So the ego is not to put down totally.
Mm-hmm.
Is it something that you think is, that's what you're saying, or do you really pushing more to bring the ego down?
No, not at all. Not
okay.
at all. Again, it depends on what you mean by ego.
Yes. Yes.
Because the word ego has been used to translate
mm-hmm.
a number of different terms. I mean, ego probably really became popularized in Western culture by Freud and the Freudians. Freud used the term ego, literally
mm-hmm.
ego. That's the term he used, and from the Latin. And
mm-hmm.
Ego means I, actually, in Latin, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
So what Freud meant by ego was actually a function that mediates between the inner life, what he called the id, you know, we don't have to go into Freudian theory, but mediates between the inner life and the outer world.
All right. Yes.
So it's a function. It's a function which is necessary.
Correct.
And in that sense, we absolutely need an ego. You know, how would you be able to function in the world
Correct.
If you didn't have a way to determine and discriminate between one thing and another? And, you know, that healthy, which you call the healthy ego, the healthy
okay.
function of ego is absolutely essential.
All right.
But then ego has also been used to translate the word from the Sanskrit, which is Atman,
mm-hmm.
Which is really means separate self.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that sense of ego is the sense really of an identification
yeah.
with thoughts, feelings, emotions, memories, et cetera, which all form this kind of aggregate
mm-hmm.
That's held together by thought and by identification.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's taken to be me. That's what's taken to be the I that I refer to. In that sense, we don't have to take ego down because ego doesn't exist.
Correct.
Ego is really an illusion.
Mm-hmm.
So really, you know, I mean, there are these thoughts, these emotions, these feelings,
yes.
You know, memories, but what we're looking at is what holds them together is really what falls apart.
Mm-hmm.
There's like a glue. There's like
mm-hmm.
The Buddha, when he was enlightened, said, house builder, you will build your house no more. you know,
mm-hmm.
meaning that the ridgepole has collapsed, he said.
Yes.
House builder, you will build your house no more.
Mm-hmm.
The house builder is the ego function of knitting these things together and creating an identity out of them. It's the glue. When
mm-hmm.
there's no more glue anymore, the thoughts, the feelings, the memories all exist, but there's no sense that they constitute a me. That's what we talk about, like, is awakening. So we're not getting rid of the ego. We're just saying the ego didn't really exist in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
You see, but there's never the sense of a healthy functioning falling apart. You know, you just, in fact, become more healthy because there's a lot less in the way of seeing things clearly.
Correct.
Yeah.
Very interesting. So that makes it clear, definitely. And another way that makes it clear in your book, and I think that's what it makes it so interactive and so powerful to me. It's because every time that you are bringing forth a vision, you are adding it a practical tool to actually implement it and
mm-hmm.
really
mm-hmm.
Work it through directly. And a lot of them, all of them, are starting with breathing.
Mm-hmm.
So can you explain why is it so important to put an emphasis on breathing?
Well, breathing breathing has a very interesting history. You know, breath in traditional Indian tradition
mm-hmm.
is seen as the link between the physical and the spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is the prana, basically,
yes.
is the intermediary between the physical dimension, or what's called the anamaya kosha, the food body, and then the more spiritualized bodies, the etheric body and the causal body. So the breath is like an intermediary. So when you tune into the breath, it is a physical sensation, but actually by tuning into the breath, it's also a conduit to spirit. So, and it's also a very convenient way just to connect with the moment, to come out of the thoughts and to come into the sensations of the moment.
Mm-hmm.
It's always available, it's always right there, you know, it's always changing. So to direct the attention to the breath is a very simple way of just being here, being now,
mm-hmm.
you know, being present. So that's why I use the breath. And you know, the traditions I studied in, you know, breath was very important,
mm-hmm.
of
mm-hmm.
course, as it is in, you know, pretty much all the spiritual traditions emphasize breath, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, and that's, you know, in my views of this body-mind-spirit connection and my background, my physical training background, I remember one of my teachers telling me, you know, you can stop drinking water for about 3 days. You can stop eating for about a week or so, but you cannot stop breathing for most likely more than
mm-hmm.
a minute.
Right.
So is there something essential within you?
Right.
It needs to start with that.
Absolutely.
And again, you know, one of those saying that just stick in your mind, and every time the physical part is, you know, in action, then that comes back. And I think that's it's another way of really realizing that potential we have, like
mm-hmm.
through just bringing the awareness
mm-hmm.
on the breathing part.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
So there's a part in your book as well that I really like. It's in the 8th chapter that says embodying the light.
Mm-hmm.
And you are talking about integrity. And so it's very interesting because integrity, you know, if I ask 10 different people, integrity is going to be 10 different points of view, obviously, tied to the belief system that that those people are, you know, grew up in, was raised in. So what do you talk about when you talk about integrity?
Mm-hmm. There are different ways of talking about integrity. But
mm-hmm.
integrity, you know, as I would understand it, would be living the truth.
Mm-hmm.
as much as you can from moment to moment. You could say it's surrendering to the truth of life itself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on the personal level, of course, integrity means telling the truth in your dealings with other people.
Mm-hmm.
But it's living your essential nature
mm-hmm.
And embodying it, as you put it. You mentioned in the chapter, embodying the light. Mm-hmm. Essentially, that's what integrity is. You are living through this body-mind the true essence of who you are from moment to moment. Now, you know, who of us ever gets to do that fully and 100% in this lifetime? You know, it's certainly a lofty accomplishment. No, it's not an accomplishment really, of course, but a lofty goal. But as much as we can to really, so it means, again, to see the beliefs and the hidden agendas that we have that we want to impose on life, and to see them for what they are, and to keep coming back to the truth of the moment. What wants to happen now? You know, where is the flow of life taking me and taking everyone around me, you see? Because most of the time, we're struggling with life, right? Mm-hmm. We're at odds with life and with other people because based on an identity of who I am and what I want to get, you know, and how I want life to be, I'm going to get it, by gosh, and I'm going to control my environment, and I'm going to do whatever I can to get what I want. I don't care who stands in my way, et cetera, et cetera. This is the American way, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it's like in France, but not quite as bad.
We have a little bit of that.
Yeah, this is the Western world, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, that puts us constantly into conflict with life. It creates struggle. It creates suffering. It creates, you know, suffering for other people as well.
Mm-hmm.
So living in integrity means really listening to what is happening around us and to really surrendering to the flow of life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, people will say, well, how can you get anything done in life if you don't have this attitude? You know, this is a common question. You know? Don't I need to struggle and strive and try to control my life?
Yeah.
But, again, in fact, people who live in integrity in this way, in harmony with the current of life, with the flow of life, are supremely happy people.
Yeah.
They don't need to, you know, get all these things that they think they need.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as the Dalai Lama says, happiness is wanting what you have and not wanting what you don't have. You know, so when you live in the flow of life, in harmony with the flow of life, there's a tremendous joy and a tremendous contentment and satisfaction because everything is, you know that everything is happening precisely the way it was meant to happen.
Correct.
Again, as we said before, how could it not?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a deep, deep acceptance of that.
Mm-hmm.
And with that comes tremendous peace and happiness. So that's what we're talking about. That's what living in integrity.
I see. Means. And it's very, you know, it's very true that that societal belief system about it needs to be hard and tough. If not, I need to earn it. If
mm-hmm.
not, it doesn't make it right. I have a few people that I work with, and we are trying to bring out their uniqueness. And obviously, that obviously is lying just right underneath. And, you know, this woman came to me and she's like, well, you know, I had that idea and I could do that and I would love to do that. And it's like, but I know it's not my uniqueness because that would be too easy.
Mm.
And it's funny because it was really for her exactly where she needed to be in order to feel at ease, because she would feel, you just could vibrate her passion when she was talking about it. But that belief system, you know, behind that was like holding her back as
no pain, no gain, huh?
Exactly.
Right.
And so now she's working on that, you know, to really cut that cord of belief system. But you can tell that there's really that, oh, well, you know, that people would know if it was that easy.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere mm-hmm. it's really that comes out a lot.
Yes, I think that's true. And
mm-hmm.
and what you're describing is like the soul level, you know, what is unique about us as individuals
mm-hmm.
That wants to be expressed through this lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that will, if we get out of the way, that will naturally express itself.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
The main thing is just getting out of the way. It's not about pushing an agenda.
Yes.
It's really just step out of the way, and because if that's what you're here to manifest, you will manifest it.
Correct. And that's another way of knowing where to go, like, you know, or what to go, you know, really what you know, should be pushed away, because, you know, if it's just resisting, if something doesn't go and unfold easily and peacefully and nicely, then there you go. You got your answer. Don't push it. And I know that I have some people telling me, well, you know, you need to be a little bit persistent here, and, you know, you need to be a little bit, I remember my mom telling me that, you know, you just have to work at it, and it's going to come to you. You know, piano needs training. You need, if you want to play piano, you need to train.
Which is true, of course.
Which is true, as long as it makes me happy to play piano.
That's right, that's right.
And that, I think that was really that big, you know, obviously I dropped piano a long time ago, and the more my mom was pushing me to do it, and then, like, 6 months ago, I said, oh, I would love to play piano. Let's
are.
Do it. And
there
then I am doing it on a daily basis. I mean, like, if I could just sleep on my piano, I could, mm-hmm. and I would. So, but I can see totally the different place, you know, two different places where I'm coming
that's
from.
Right. That's right. Yes,
you know,
exactly.
So,
exactly.
Yeah, definitely. It's pushing it away. And it's like, when it's not the right time, it's going to come to you if you have to do
absolutely.
It anyway. So,
absolutely.
You know,
right.
So another very interesting point that you are bringing forth. And I think that that's another myth that is that when people get into a spiritual path and get on again, you see, I'm saying that. But it's really like when their journey is awakening to them, or it's bringing front, it's. With that belief that they have to, you know, meditate a lot and sit down and calm everything down. And you bring in the ninth chapter of your book that notion of maybe the bypassing, the spiritual bypassing, where some people have a tendency to stay too high. I'm going to say it in quotes. Can you explain that to our listeners and myself?
Stay too high? Say a little more. What do you mean?
Yes, the spiritual bypassing.
Spiritual bypassing.
Yeah.
Well, spiritual bypassing essentially is when you use your meditation to get into a certain kind of state, mind mm-hmm. state, which then keeps you from experiencing deeper issues, deeper feelings that may really want. Again, you were talking about if you get out of the way, things will surface and manifest in their natural way. But sometimes people use meditation, and when I was a Zen monk, we used to talk about the power of samadhi. Samadhi is like, you know, a concentrated state of mind. And particularly in the Zen tradition, samadhi is used as a way to keep emotions at bay. The great Zen master Dogen used to say that meditation was dancing on the heads of demons. By which he meant, you know, unfortunately, what he meant by that was that, you know, you meditate and you keep the demons at bay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that may be great in a monastic situation where mm-hmm. you can do that day after day after day, and maybe you get through life without having to deal with your demons. But in our world, you know, if you don't deal with your demons, they will come back to haunt you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, and I've met spiritual teachers who mm-hmm. have you know, definitely been spiritually bypassing and
mm-hmm.
have ended up acting in very unskillful ways as a result of not dealing with some fundamental issues. You know,
yes.
So the approach to meditation that I recommend is not concentration
mm-hmm.
meditation. It's more open, spacious awareness meditation,
mm-hmm.
being open and present for what is, without excluding anything.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is welcome. My teacher, Jean Klein, used to use the term welcoming,
mm-hmm.
to welcome mm-hmm. everything. And this sense of welcoming in your meditation, in your life, you welcome what arises, you welcome what's there.
Mm-hmm.
That is the attitude in meditation and,
mm-hmm.
and in life. If, as long as you're welcoming, you're not going to be able to bypass,
okay.
because things will arise in their natural time.
Mm-hmm.
And confront you and say, now it's my turn.
Mm-hmm.
Deal with me, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Life has a tendency to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some, you know, people who have this samadhi and they power through life
mm-hmm.
and then they end up sleeping with their students or doing other
mm-hmm.
unskillful things, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen
mm-hmm.
it again and again.
Yes,
yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So you were talking about Jean Klein, as I would pronounce it in a French way. But you mentioned one of his saying in your book that I really, really like. In your absence is your presence.
Yes.
And I find that so powerful.
Yes.
Can you explain, like, what is this absence that he's talking about?
Yeah, it's a very powerful statement, actually. It was one that really affected me deeply, touched me very deeply. He was talking about, you know, usually we think of presence as something we do, you know, that the I does. I'm going to be present now.
Mm-hmm.
But what he was talking about was presence with a big P, you know, presence as consciousness, as awareness, our essential nature. When you are absent, when the I, the separate self, is absent, seen to be an illusion, then true presence comes to the foreground. True presence is then all that's meeting this moment. There is no separate self meeting this moment. Usually we think, you know, I am experiencing this moment. You know, we add this extra piece to it. You know, the wind is blowing, the trees are moving, I can hear the sounds of the birds, and I am hearing it. Me, you know, Stephen, Aileen, we're hearing it, you know.
Sure.
I am hearing it. But actually all that's happening is sound, movement.
Yes.
There's no one hearing it. And so when this separate self-sense is out of the equation, there's just presence. Presence for what is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he was talking about. You know, this presence with a capital P. And you can, and this is what you experience when you're with a great teacher.
Mm-hmm.
You experience this presence, which is so deep. Again, it knocks your socks off because you've never experienced presence like that when you meet it. And it's palpable. You can really, it's not just something abstract that we're talking about here. It's something very palpable. You can feel it in the soles of your feet. You can feel it in your heart. You know, you can feel it deep in your being, in your bones, this quality of presence.
So can you give an explanation between awakening and enlightenment, that I feel, feel that there's a lot coming as a confusion in those terms,
Well, you know, in one sense, you know, awakening and enlightenment are the same thing, but I think that enlightenment is thrown about too readily. The word enlightenment is thrown about too readily. And in the Buddhist tradition, which again was where I come from, I don't really identify with it as such anymore, the term enlightenment is usually reserved for someone who is completely empty, you see, for whom there are no residues arising anymore. There's no trace of a separate self arising. Someone like the Buddha, someone like the great masters, this would be full and complete enlightenment, is the way it's often called. Now, you can awaken without becoming fully enlightened. In fact, that's generally how it happens. Most people have an awakening experience in which, for example, they have this experience of suddenly they can't find this separate self. It suddenly drops away. It's no longer in the realm of their experience. And if they look for it, they can't find it. And this can happen in a moment.
Yeah.
And there's just like a gap. There's something gone. And this can usually is a very powerful, very transformative experience. But again, what will tend to happen is that after this, the sense of its separate self will reemerge. It'll come back and start reasserting itself. So there's usually a rather prolonged period of embodiment, what I call embodiment in the book, which it's a matter of, again, really living the truth that you've awakened to in your daily life, so that you are actually realizing that you are no one, that you are living from no one. You are living from this, the truth of your being. You're living from source. as mm-hmm. sometimes called, right? Mm-hmm. Living from spirit rather than from a separate self.
Mm-hmm.
So when the separate self completely drops away and there's no recurrence of a sense of separate self, that's full and complete enlightenment. But for most mm-hmm. people, there's a journey, and mm-hmm. that's why I wrote this book, because there really is no book
mm-hmm.
that, until this one, there was no book that talked about the complete journey
yes. Yes.
from awakening, you know, from seeking to awakening, and then from awakening through to full enlightenment and all that comes in between, because there's
correct.
So much that comes in between, so many yes. ways that you get sidetracked or confused
yes.
or misled.
Uh-huh.
You know, or identified, you know, the enlightened ego. I am enlightened.
Yeah.
You know, I had an awakening experience, therefore I am enlightened. You know, all the damage that's done, you know, in the name of that, you know. If you're really enlightened or awakened, you can't say I'm enlightened
correct.
Awakened. Who are you talking about?
Right? That's true. That's true.
You know, I mean, certainly you ask a teacher, they may say I'm awakened, but if they...
Yes.
If they're identifying it as that, then they're definitely not awakened.
Oh, right, yeah, yeah. So it's very interesting because it's been a long time ago, enough to say long, but I was reading a lot about Helena Blavatsky and theosophy,
yeah.
philosophy, and she was talking about that. But it's true that before I read your book, I have not found any book that actually translated that notion of awakening by unveiling who you truly are, just nowhere to go, it just has to be. It's here and now and here and,
mm-hmm.
and nowhere else. And it's true that this is probably the first book that I read that is really bringing that idea that stop seeking, stop searching, stop being out there and,
mm-hmm.
and really bring it in. Even though, you know, we hear that it's an inner process, that it's inside, but I think that your book is really a very, very good support for beginners as well as people who already, you know, have understood a lot of concept. I think that's why
yeah.
it's really available for...
That's what I intended, to make it a book for the full range of people, from people who are just
correct.
Starting out, who want to know
yes.
what awakening is and how do I
yes.
do that, and
yes.
to people who are well along on the path.
Correct.
It's really meant for everyone, and hopefully I've written it in such a way that it's very accessible. I would say, I just want to correct one thing you said, though. Certainly this is not, by any means, the only book that introduces the notion that
correct
that yeah what it is unique is that it covers the full range
yes.
particularly the post awakening experiences that people will encounter
yes
yeah
it's more actually yeah that path after
yes
than,
so particularly
than,
that's
yeah,
what
definitely.
What's unique about it, but it certainly does cover all the part before in a lot of
yes.
detail as well yeah.
So what's interesting and let's say that you mentioned earlier, like on the earlier part of the show, that you talk about children, and it's true that we all go through a time where we forget who we truly are,
mm-hmm.
and that we need to get back into it. And it happens that, you know, when you have parents like me who have an understanding, and granted that I may not have or have accomplished full range, but it seems like I have a greater understanding that my mom had or her mom had in terms of that knowingness of belonging
mm-hmm.
to a greater source.
Mm-hmm.
How do I translate it to my kids to let them, you know, never really forget that part?
Well, you know, Jean Klein used to say that it's pretty much impossible to prevent it.
So
relax.
Oh, okay, good.
You know, that you really can't prevent it, just given our culture.
Yes.
You know, and just given the way, you know, the separate self seems to just develop.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be almost inevitable
mm-hmm.
that it will happen. The main thing is that... whatever separate self does develop is a more fluid one. You
mm-hmm.
know, It's not rigid, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And of course you do that by loving your children and
mm-hmm.
loving them unconditionally rather than loving them for their accomplishments, right?
Mm-hmm.
And giving them a lot latitude to find their own way and
mm-hmm.
and just supporting them. There's actually this beautiful movie. Have you seen Juno, the movie Juno?
Oh, I did not, but
about
I
this young
it,
woman
yeah.
and her father is so sweet. She becomes pregnant. She's 16 and she becomes pregnant.
Oh,
and she carries the baby to full term. It's a very sweet movie and very funny.
Mm-hmm.
But her father is so supportive of her. And I thought, what a beautiful father, you know. He's
mm-hmm.
just
mm-hmm.
you know, he has a few things to say to her, but he's just very supportive. And I thought, letting her go through her own experience.
Yes.
You know, and finding her own way, and she does. And that kind of attitude
okay.
is the best that we can offer, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
and to live the truth of our being as much as we can, of course.
Yes.
You know, in our own life. And so we are an example as much as we can
correct.
Be.
Correct.
Not trying to be an example, but just because that's what's true for us and that's
yes.
what matters to us. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So you are you live in Austin and you have created a school here.
Yes.
And can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yes, yes. School for Awakening, it's called. Mm-hmm. And it's run under the auspices of the International University of Professional Studies, for those who might want to get, you know, degree, you know, credit toward a degree. But
mm-hmm.
primarily what it is it's a distance learning opportunity
mm-hmm.
for people all over the country and, you know, the world if they want. So far no one has come from outside the United States.
Mm-hmm.
To come together, we have three day intensives
mm-hmm.
that we do over the course of 8 months, where we meet together as a group and we meditate and we explore truth together. I give talks, we have discussions or guided meditations together.
Mm-hmm.
And then we, between times, we have phone conferencing
mm-hmm.
where we have a dozen sessions where are called satsangs where, again, we do a little meditation together. I give a talk on a particular topic. Again, we have some dialogue around this topic and some exploration. So there's plenty of time for everyone to ask all the questions they can have, to
mm-hmm.
to bond with a group of people who are fellow seekers on the same path, to have an opportunity to have contact with a teacher,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, I think, at least from my experience, really invaluable. I've had the good fortune of having teachers who I could really be close to, so I wanted to make it available to people. From all over, you know, you live out in the middle of Kansas, you know,
yeah.
or somewhere in North Dakota, or, you know,
mm-hmm.
you don't have any access. It's a long, long way.
Yes.
So this is an opportunity for people.
Definitely.
Yes.
So if people want to know more about it, you have a website, obviously.
Yes.
Can you give it to us?
Yeah, it's www.stephanbodian, that's STEPHANBODIAN.org.
Mm-hmm.
And the school is on there. It's one of the pages on the site.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And I will have a little show preview, you know, on the web page, on Conscious Fitness Divine Body page. And obviously, your website is on, and you're going to be able to click on it and get all the information that you need to get at that time. Is there any phone number where the world
can reach
you?
The people can call 415-451-7133.
Mm-hmm.
Three.
Very good.
But probably, you know, since most people have computers, check out the website,
yes.
read about it. It's described in quite a bit of detail, including the
yes.
format and the times for the events and things. And
mm-hmm.
It's a really a lovely opportunity. The people who've done it before have
mm-hmm.
really had powerful experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's great. Great opportunity.
And I think that really, you know, getting the book, which is really the first step to really understand your vision and see where you're coming from, and it really opens the door to something that we all intuitively know that it's bigger. So I think that I really encourage our listeners to walk, run, jump to the next Barnes and Noble and whoever, but purchase it and read through it. It is very interactive and very fun to read. And it took me 2 days, so I can tell you it was really my sweet dessert for a couple of days. So thank you so much, Stephen.
Thank you so much, Eileen. Really lovely to talk with you. You asked wonderful questions, and I really enjoyed our discussion.
Very good. Me too. And we are waiting for to have you back on the air with us, because I'm sure that the subject is a never-ending process of questions and answers. So we will be more than happy to have you back here with us.
I would enjoy that. Thank you so much.
Okay, great. Listeners, I thank you so much for having spent the time with us here, and hopefully you have learned, and I know you have learned a lot about awakening, and if you want to know more, then just a click away. You are a click away to know more. Have a great day, and we'll see you next week in Conscious Fitness Divine Body. Bye-bye.
Can I fly away?